CTV.
Boy, what a difference between Esau and Moses, huh? Huh? What do you say? Esau and Moses, an example of immediate gratification in the flesh and despising satisfaction in the flesh in comparison to one's longing for the great things of God. This is Martin Zender. I'm the world's most outspoken Bible scholar, and welcome to MZTV. It's always great to be with you. These accounts in the scriptures, well, these things happen to those people for our benefit. That's a scripture verse there. I'll put the reference down here. These things happened as examples so that we could learn from them. It's rough being the example. If I had the choice between being the example of Job and the example of Solomon, I would take Solomon. Job is a lesson concerning evil, that evil does not happen to you because you're a bad person. Evil happens to you because it is an experience of evil Elohim has given to the sons of humanity, the humanity, to humble them by it. It's not because you're a bad person. We learn that in Job, and that God will always make up for the evil. He'll pay you double, triple, quadruple, beyond. Wait till you see. Wait till you see. But Job had to live it out as an example. I would rather be the example of Solomon. Solomon had to live out the truth that no matter how rich you are, or how many concubines you have, how many different positions you have sex in, how many different ways you can have sex, seems to be Solomon's big thing, you're not going to be happy. The richest man in the world, people came to Solomon. The Queen of Sheba came to Solomon. I mean, the Queen of Sheba. And the man was great. There was peace in his kingdom. So he had no war, no stupidity. In other words, he was the wisest man who ever lived. And lots of concubines and wives. Wives and concubines. And what does he say? It's all vanity. See, God tested Job with evil, and he tested Solomon with good. And the results are, in a weird way, the same. The result for Job was, well, I heard about God, now I see him. It's a revelation of God. And Solomon's conclusion was, worship God, it's all about God. Isn't that interesting? Evil brought Job to the end of himself, and good brought Solomon to the end of himself. I'm not a big fan of Jim Carrey's political views. I am a fan of his movies, but I'm definitely a fan of him saying something on an interview. I think it was with 60 Minutes. He said, I wish everyone could be rich and famous so they can see how it doesn't make you happy. He's famous for being depressed. Jim Carrey is. And many, many celebrities, those people that we would envy, are actually sad people. Comedians are the saddest of all, paradoxically enough. But two examples in the scripture of living for today, satisfying your every urge for today, and putting off your pleasure until God brings it to you, are Esau and Moses. So what I want to do now is go to the Esau account. I never call these stories, Martin, tell us some Bible stories. No, but I will tell you Bible accounts. I will read to you historical accounts of the works of God as he demonstrates things through humans that he brings into the world. Jacob and Esau were two sons of Isaac. Isaac was the son of Abraham. And so Jacob was Abraham's grandson. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. He was the father of the people we term Israelites today, or commonly referred to as Jews, if you like. But if some remarkable thing had not happened, as recorded in Genesis 25, then that famous group of people living out there in the Middle East would be called Edomites after Esau, or Esaulians, something like that, because Esau was the firstborn of Isaac, two sons, Jacob and Esau. Esau was born first. That was a big deal in Israel. He had all the privileges. But Jacob wanted the privileges. Jacob longed for the birthright. Jacob had more in view spiritual blessings, and even though he used trickery to get them. So gather around and I will tell you an account. This is Genesis chapter 25, verse 27. Well, let's start with verse 24. That's pretty interesting because we have an account of these two, Jacob and Esau, in the womb. They were twins. I didn't mention that. So Esau was barely the firstborn. When her days were fulfilled to give birth, behold, there were twins in her belly, the belly of Rebekah, the wife of Isaac. The first came forth ruddy, all of him like a hairy mantle. So the first child to come out, Isaac looked at him and said, Did you have sex with an orangutan or something? Now this red-colored, hairy thing came out. So they called his name Esau, naturally. Esau means red. And afterward, his brother came forth, and his hand was holding Esau's heel. How about that? Jacob, the guy who was renamed Israel, the father of the Israelites, even in the womb, he was pissed off that the hairy one, the son of the orangutan, was coming out first, so he grabbed his heel, trying to pull him back and get position. This guy, he's plotting, even in the womb. So they called his name Jacob, naturally. Wait a minute, the Concordant has names down here. Yeah, okay, wait a minute. Esau's name means hairy in Arabic. I didn't look at the footnote down here in the Concordant version of the Old Testament. But the people named after him, the Edomites, that means red. So we got red and hairy covered with him. They named the second child, the one hanging on to the orangutan's heel, they named him Jacob, which means circumventer. Not even kidding. Jacob, circumventer, goes around, finds another way to get things done. You got to admire the guy in a way. God admired him. He blessed him. He wanted the birthright so badly. He couldn't get it in the womb, couldn't pull that orangutan back enough to reposition himself. Not that he didn't try. It's so funny. I've never heard of twins being born where one's grabbing onto the ankle of another one. Like, no, no, you're not coming out. You're not coming out. I'm going to go first. If this stuff weren't written down, you could never believe it. It's amazing. This guy really wanted to be firstborn before he even knew what firstborn was. Now, Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah bore them. So Isaac was still very virile. Speaking of virile, I remember this advertisement in the Willard Times. I used to work for the post office in Willard, Ohio, which was about 11 miles west of Greenwich, where I raised my family. And my friend Matt Rohrbeck worked in the post office, and he was reading this advertisement. Somebody was looking for a mate, and he called himself a viral lover instead of a virile lover. Oh, the difference a vowel can make. Oh, wanted. Beautiful woman to be the companion of a viral lover. Viral? Better wear your mask. Virile. Ready to reproduce at a moment's notice. So Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah bore them. Verse 27, I'm in Genesis 25. As the lads grew up, Esau became a man knowing how to hunt, a man of the open field. Yet Jacob was an unsullied man, dwelling in tents. Jacob was a pretty boy, refined, clean fingernails. Esau, forget it, he was a hunting man, a man of the open field. Once, when Jacob had a stew simmering, Esau came from the field and he was faint with hunger. Esau said to Jacob, "Let me glut now from the red, this red stew, for I am faint." Therefore, one called his name Edom also. Okay, so I guess Edom was his nickname. Edom means red. Esau means hairy. He was red and hairy. And so there you go. And he was so faint from his hunting that he begged his brother for the stew. And boy, Jacob must have been a good cook. The stew was simmering. Jacob replied to Esau, "Do sell me as of today your birthright. I couldn't get you in the womb, you little orangutan, but I'm going to get you now. Sell me your birthright, and I'll give you some of this delicious stew." If this wasn't in the scriptures, how could you possibly believe it? And Esau said, "Behold, I'm going to die anyhow. What good then is a birthright to me?" Jacob replied to him, "Do swear to me as of today." So he swore to him. Thus Esau sold his birthright to Jacob, and Jacob became, though he was second born and not entitled to it, his brother sold away his birthright for a simmering stew. Wow. Talk about immediate satisfaction and not caring about the important things of God being firstborn. It was a huge deal in Israel. And he sold it off because he was hungry. He later came to regret it, but I'm not going to get into all that. He just wept and couldn't get it back. He was heart-stricken. He was just grieving. He could not get it back because he already made his choice. I know all these choices are of God. This is here for a lesson for us. He lost it. That's why those people out there are not called Edomites or Esaulians. They are called Israelites. That's why. Because this guy was hungry one day. Starving. And he was a little drama queen. "I'm not going to die anyway. I'm going to die. I'm dying." My goodness. A bit of a hypochondriac. Bit of a drama queen there. Hyperbolic, numbskull, orangutan type. Contrast that with Moses. Paul, the writer of Hebrews, is writing about the heroes of faith in chapter 11. In verse 23, he says, "By faith, Moses, being born, was hid 3 months by his fathers because they perceived that the little boy was handsome and they were not afraid of the mandate of the king." The king wanted all the boys, and Israel killed. The Pharaoh wanted all the boys killed. The firstborn, I don't know if it was the firstborn, maybe just the good-looking ones. I guess the Pharaoh didn't want any competition, kind of like Herod wanting the babies in Israel killed also. Terrible situation there. But anyway, you know the story. Watch the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston and Yul Brynner if you don't know the story. Vincent Price is in that too. Plays a really nasty guy. So you know the story. He was picked up by Pharaoh's daughter. And Moses' mother, his sister, really agreed to take care of him. You know, she sent him in the river, hoping that the Pharaoh's daughter would find them because they were not of means. Moses' family were not rich by any means, so they came up with a great plan that actually worked. Let's put them adrift in a basket so that Pharaoh's daughter, when she comes down to the river to bathe or giggle or do whatever she does, she'll pick him up, say, "Oh, what a cute baby," because apparently he was extremely cute, and then she would take him in, and then the daughter would spring forth and say, "Oh, that's wonderful that you found this baby. I know a lady who can nurse him." And that was his mother. What a great setup. Anyway, Moses, when he was in Egypt, became great. And you know the story. He became great. He didn't know who he was, had lost his identity. Nobody told him. Finally, he understood that he was an Israelite. What am I doing in Egypt? My people are in bondage. Yeah, his own people were in bondage. He didn't realize they were his people. Charlton Heston didn't know it at first. Come to find out, holy crap, I'm an Israelite. I'm brothers of these people getting beaten. So he starts to defend the Israelites. He ends up killing an Egyptian for beating one of his people. The long story short is that when he realizes who he is, he has a choice. Either to continue in Egypt or to join the people of God and be a miserable, wretched slave, and God knows what's going to happen to you. What did he do? By faith, Moses, becoming great, disowns the term son of Pharaoh's daughter, preferring rather to be maltreated with the people of God than to have a temporary enjoyment of sin. And here's the application for us in this present day, deeming the reproach of Christ. See, Christ hasn't come into the world yet, and yet Christ being looked forward to, deeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked away to the reward. And by faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the fury of the king, for he is staunch as seeing the invisible. Staunch. And by faith he has the Passover made and the pouring of blood against the door jams. That took faith, because that was a crazy sounding order from on high. Put blood on your doorpost because the death angel is going to go by and kill all the firstborn in Egypt. What? That sounds crazy. I'm not going to do that. No, by faith, Moses did it. He did it. He had the Passover made, pouring blood against the door jams, lets the exterminator of the firstborn come into contact with the firstborn of Egypt. But of course, the firstborn of the Israelites were not touched. That took faith to do that. And Moses went off into the wilderness with his people for 40 years. We don't hear from him at all because he is looking off to a reward, looking off to something greater. Disowned the term son of Pharaoh's daughter. He had every advantage in Egypt, all the riches, all the honor that he wanted. Easy life, man. People fanning him all day like this. When he went off in the wilderness, they had to get electric fans. No, none of this personal fanning. Oh, no, he had a rough life, but God comforted him in that life because Moses chose the right thing. Moses said, I'm not going to continue to be great. This is cheap wealth. This is cheap. I want to know who I am. I want to know the God of my forefathers. And so he gave it all up. And Jesus says, he who loves his soul will lose it. He who loses it for my sake will gain it. When Jesus said to lose your soul, it means to don't count your feelings or your aspirations or your wants as so great, as so powerful, so that they take you over. Yeah, you can have aspirations, you can have wants, but don't let them become the ultimate driving force in your life so that you want to just satisfy every physical urge you have. No, that's not why we're here. We're here to look off toward the greater thing, toward the spiritual. That's why we're here. And so here's two examples, one of what not to do, one of to do. Yes, we have nice stew, we have great soups, but we don't sell our birthright to get that. We don't sell our time with God, our heart, to pursue things that aren't as valuable as a spiritual life. There's a lot of things you can get distracted by in this life for temporal advantage. No, don't do that. Don't be, you'll never make the wrong decision, ever, by putting aside those things that would give you temporal advantage at the expense of the things of God. Things of God are obviously the most important things. I came to this crossroads in 1993. It was either continue working with the post office to have a regular income, work for the government, great retirement, or quit with a wife and three kids and do the work of God. I came to this crossroads, and thank God, the Spirit of God in me caused me to make the right choice. And God has blessed me over and over again. I like to think, and I'm a living example of this, but this decision is made every day. It's still made every day. There's so many distractions of the world, in the world. Martha and Mary, another example of that. Martha was busy about many things, but Jesus said, of one thing is there need, and that is to sit at his feet and tend to him.